Between the 8th and 10th of June this year, Inlet Africa hosted a digital event in which we examined the role of the 5 Ds of the energy transition. In the second part of the series, we share a discussion with Christoph Reimnitz, chairman of the Gas to Power Working Group for the World LPG Association.
Sub-Saharan Africa has the largest number of people without access to power. However, any new power generation will be met with the increasingly strict standards of a decarbonizing world. Some are wondering whether Sub-Saharan Africa can leapfrog the energy transition, as it has done with the communication revolution, through the use of mobile phones by utilizing smart technologies. But how can this be applied to power generation, and how can it be undertaken without committing future generations to unmanageable debt levels? This is just one of the questions Chris and I'll be discussing today. Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Thanks, Claire. It's great being with you, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to chat with you for the next 20 or so minutes. So I'm excited about this, and it's something that's dear to my heart, talking about power in Sub-Saharan Africa.
Well, speaking of power in Sub-Saharan Africa, obviously power access, power generation is an issue, especially in an increasingly decarbonized world. But you believe that you may have part of the answer to that question. Can I ask you to elaborate a little bit?
Well, let me start with the word decarbonization. It's a word that's being talked about a lot these days in the context of climate change. And we must differentiate how to look at decarbonization depending on which part of the world we would like to discuss. Most countries in the Northern Hemisphere have reached electrification of 100% many decades ago, and therefore need to be assessed differently from countries across Africa, and more specifically, Sub-Saharan Africa, where in a country like, for example, Senegal, rural electrification in 2018 stood at only 42%. The issue in such instances is, how do we increase the electricity penetration, but do so in the least environmentally damaging way? And that brings me to your next point of leapfrogging. Sub-Saharan Africa can avoid some of the mistakes, or better, evolutionary steps that have been taken in the developed world, and can start electrification with cost-competitive renewables without having to invest into carbon-intensive fuels, such as, for example, coal. But electricity from renewables is intermittent, which means there is the risk of no electricity when the sun does not shine or the wind does not blow. And therefore, there needs to be some sort of dispatchable power, i.e. power that is available on demand. That is likely to come from fossil fuel. The question, therefore, is which fossil fuel is relatively clean and affordable? Liquid fuels such as diesel and HFO do not meet these requirements, but are widely used. Hence, gas is the most obvious solution.
What is LPG, for instance, in comparison to LNG, and why is it preferable than utilizing LNG for power generation?
Okay, I think we need to, and this is a very important point, we need to point out that LPG is gas. And that is important because, widely speaking, when people hear gas, they associate with it natural gas. When gas is being lifted, there is a byproduct which is often called associated gas, and that is LPG. And that matters because it kind of tells you something about how LPG should be considered. It is gas, and it cleans and it burns very similarly to natural gas, and similarly means from an environmental perspective as cleanly. So that's the first point. The second point is natural gas requires pipelines to get from A to B, normally speaking, and there are very few pipelines anywhere in Africa. So the next best thing is what you do is you liquefy natural gas and it becomes liquid natural gas, or LNG, which is often talked about. And that's where some of the challenges start, because LNG, first of all, becomes, or natural gas becomes liquid at temperatures of minus 160 degrees centigrade. So you have to put energy into the liquefaction process, and it costs money. Then you have dedicated ships that bring the LNG from one part to another part of the world, and you need ports. And these ports need to have specific terminals to receive the LNG. And so LNG today is widely used and associated with transporting gas. But if we take a snapshot today and we see that LNG has infrastructure in 42 countries across the globe, and I compare that with LPG, it's basically available in 130 countries or more globally. And there is a reason for that, because LPG is widely used for cooking. It is used as a cooking gas, brought into many countries, particularly across Africa, stored in spheres or containers in ports, and then transported to distribution centers where it's being packaged in cylinders, 6, 8, 10, 12 kilograms at a time, and then distributed to local households. So long explanation of saying, look, you already have LPG infrastructure almost everywhere in Africa. It's being used for cooking. It should be used for power generation, as is natural gas, because it is so similar. And people should consider using it, leveraging the existing infrastructure, because that allows you, in a way, to leapfrog, because you don't have to go through the complicated and expensive planning processes if you were considering bringing in LNG.
So what, I mean, why would this then be preferable in terms of utilization for remote locations or potentially as part of a hybrid solution?
Yeah, so that is a very good question, because we get to the point of logistics. There is a continuum, or if you were to look at a scale, and on the one hand, you have diesel, which is omnipresent. You can buy a canister of diesel almost anywhere in Africa today. And then you have at the other end gas. And as I explained, if you don't have a pipeline, it's going to be very difficult to acquire gas or purchase gas anywhere unless you find a canister. Now, LPG, although it is a gas, comes close to diesel because of what I just explained with the cylinders. And every time you have to ship fuel, there's a bit of cost added. So think about it this way. Your diesel in Africa as well, and we can stick with Nigeria for the time being, comes into the port of Lagos, let's say, although Nigeria has its own oil lifting procedure. But let's assume the diesel comes in port of Lagos. You then fill it into, it's there being stored, and then it goes into trucks. The same would happen with LPG. And because LPG is widely used as a household gas, there are trucks available today in almost every country to transport LPG. So what you need is basically an ISO container, which is a large bullet carrying 25 tons at a time of LPG, which sits on the back of a truck, and you can truck it fairly remotely inland, so also into landlocked countries in Africa. And because you already have so many components of the infrastructure, you don't have to make these massive investments. If you were now thinking about bringing LNG, and there is LNG that's being exported, let's say with Nigeria, you would then have to purchase LNG trucks, which are more expensive than an LPG truck, because the LNG truck needs to keep the minus 160 degrees centigrade temperature. Then you need to either discharge at the point of where you want to use the LNG, so you have to either cool it there, or it's being regasified, but then the volume expands. So LNG is a compressed form of natural gas by a factor of 600. So then you need big storage facilities. You need, you were to build all of this if you wanted to do it with LNG. And this is where LPG comes in as actually very convenient. It's almost everywhere in Africa. It should be used for power generation. And it's been a communications issue, in my view, that it hasn't been considered in the past, looking at sub-Saharan Africa. And that's where you need dispatchable power, as I said earlier. So you could put up, let's say, a 2-megawatt solar PV farm, and then you put in 2 engines, 1 megawatt each, and they would run, let's say, for a few hours every day. And these could be running on LPG, much more environmentally friendly than a diesel engine, which would basically obliterate all the environmental benefits right there. So that's kind of what we're advocating. We're saying, be creative, think about LPG as an addendum to your renewable strategy, particularly when you're going off grid, you're not connected to the grid, you need the power 24/7, or at least in the early evening hours after it's gotten dark, which is when everybody goes home, switches on their tea kettles or starts cooking, et cetera. That's when the electricity is being needed.
And final question, if I may, how easily is an existing, say, diesel engine converted to be able to run on LPG?
So most companies today, most original equipment manufacturers or OEMs have actually product that runs on LPG. They'll have a selection of engines that are capable of burning LPG. And the good news is those engines will be able to burn also natural gas. So in the event natural gas becomes available, no additional investment required. You know, just maybe in closing one comment, because you're based in South Africa, obviously there was just the RMIPPPP, and South Africa benefits from significant LPG storage infrastructure. And it's something to keep in mind, because I know there, LNG is being considered as the fuel going forward. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Having the infrastructure in place and taking advantage of it for energy and electricity generation purposes may make a lot of sense. So I'll leave you with that. And again, thank you so much for having had me.
Thanks, Chris. I think that's actually a very important point. And I'm fairly sure that because this is just the beginning of the conversation about the role that various types of gases can play for power generation, that we will most likely be hearing a lot more about the role of LPG going forward. I certainly look forward to catching up with you again during the year to see how things are progressing.
Thank you for joining us for the second podcast in the series, in which we share content from the ENLIT Africa Digital Event. We will be back with more every Friday, and we'll be hosting our next digital conference between the 26th and the 28th of October. You can find out more by visiting our website, enlit-africa.com. Join us next week when we will be discussing what happens when mini-grids meet the national grid.